We know what it means to be generous, and we know what it means to be a leader. But what happens when you put these two concepts together? Well, today's guest explains the magic that comes from combining a generous mindset with leadership responsibilities. A warm welcome to Michaela L. and Michelle A. to the Modern Manager community. Today's guest is Joe Davis. Joe is a managing director and senior partner at the Boston Consulting Group, where he's been for 37 years. His new book, The Generous Leader, 7 Ways to Give of Yourself for Everyone's Gain, reflects his passion for people and his desire to support their development and inspire teams to work better than they thought possible. In the extended episode, available to members of Podcast Plus, Joe and I talk about how small acts have big impact and how you can incorporate more small but powerful acts into your day and week. Now here's the conversation. Are you a manager, boss, or team leader who aspires to level up and unleash your team's full potential? You're listening to the Modern Manager Podcast, and I'm your host, Mamie Canfer-Stewart. Each week, I explore effective strategies and provide actionable insights that supercharge your management abilities, optimize team performance, and foster a healthy workplace culture. Become a rockstar manager and help your team thrive at themodernmanager.com/more. Thank you so much for joining me today, Joe. I'm very excited to talk about what it means to be a generous leader and the different types of generosity and skill sets and behaviors that it takes to really be a leader who understands and connects with their people and supports their people. So thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's exciting.
So why don't you start by just explaining what this kind of meta idea is around being a generous leader? Because I'm not sure that's a term. I mean, at least I hadn't heard that term before I read your book. So I'm guessing most other people also are so familiar with this idea of generosity in the form of leadership.
At the core, to me, you know, a generous leader is actually somebody who gives of themselves, you know, freely without expectation of some personal benefit, to enable others to grow, develop, and thrive at their full potential. And that's really what it, the nutshell it means to be. Now, it's funny because I say without personal benefit, but if you're helping others grow at their full potential, obviously, if you're the leader, your team's probably going to perform better and everybody's going to, you know, win or whatever it might be, but do better. So that's what I think of it as. And I think, you know, in that context, you know, there's a lot of elements that I think are important, but I think there's a couple critical ones. You know, one is you actually are seeing your team, your employees, your colleagues, whatever, as people, as humans, not as cogs in a wheel, you know, the organization's wheel, which if you think of, not to pick on IBM, but that old commercial of the IBM, you know, just the blue, white shirt, blue suit, you know, it's just very standard. We're all a part of the thing. And I don't think that's, I don't know what to think. You know, you can see reams of studies and data. That is not what people expect today and what people want in a work environment.
You're right. Like this general concept of, you know, being human at work and kind of being welcoming and accepting and supportive and all of that, putting people at the center is not so new anymore. But I think the way that you've broken it apart into different components is really helpful. And I'm wondering if you could walk us through what the different ways that we can show up as a generous leader in our behaviors. Maybe what are the different buckets that you kind of think about?
The meta level, you're really seeing your team as humans, and at some level, you're caring. Now, I think there's a number of traits or buckets you said that I think are critical. They might be in one order in what I wrote, but I might even change the order a little bit. But I think it's very important that as a leader, you really take the time to listen and learn, you know, or perspective taking, as they say in the psych books. You know, what is the other's perspective? Where are they coming from? What is their lived experience? And very importantly, what do they know that you don't know, that the two together make for a better thing? You know, that's quite important. Another one is, you know, really connecting personally and deeply with folks. And, you know, we'll see where you want to go. I can tell some interesting stories about some of these, but that's another important point. Then I think another one is being an action ally, which, you know, it's not just a mentor. I mean, you got to be a mentor, but actually an action ally, meaning in the sense of enabling those who might have less of a fair starting chance to at least get in the game in a fair way. Obviously, a real development is critical. And I use the word generous development, but it's really about recognizing strengths and doing the work to understand some of the strengths and then helping them to learn and be better on the opportunities areas, leveraging those strengths. And I do think something else important is which someone may not be as defined as generous, is actually clear, direct, I won't say hard, but, you know, blunt feedback in the moment, actually, I think is the sign of real generosity, as opposed to mush feedback where people say, what are you telling me? And you can't learn from it. Ted Lasso and all that make it overused, but authenticity and vulnerability is quite critical. I mean, you need, if you're really going to listen to somebody and say, wait, they know something I don't know, well, you better have some vulnerability, at least in your head, or how do I connect with this person personally? So that's quite important. And then I think another one is really thinking about how you include everyone. And I don't mean inclusion. I mean, I mean it in the sense of diversity, you know, that way, but also, but I mean it more in making sure you have different perspectives, different levels in your meetings, especially as a leader. Don't just surround yourself with your team that's going to tell you the same thing. And finally, it's actually Scott Kirby, you know, the last one I said, small acts make big impact. And Scott Kirby, the CEO of United Airlines, said to me, well, Joe, those are the big impacts, the small moments, you know, whether it be as simple as a thank you, congratulations, and of course, it could be many more than that, recognizing people on their birthdays. The CEO of BCG, the previous one, used to call every partner on their birthday. And as the firm got bigger and bigger, he must have spent 2 hours every morning just calling people. But these small acts, you know, just can signal really that you care and, you know, motivate and inspire people. So those are the seven pieces I've identified. I think the most important are listening to learn, connecting personally, and, you know, being vulnerable or authentic enough that they believe you actually care, and then developing generously.
Let's start with the listening piece, because the thing that really stood out to me, both in what you were describing and what I was reading in your book, was about the way of listening and being curious that is about trying to really understand and almost kind of preemptively understand what is important to this person. Who are they? Where are they coming from? So that when you come in to listen, you're not coming in to ask, just ask questions and listen to their answers, but you're really trying to understand
them.
And can you maybe unpack a little bit more about what that kind of deep listening really looks like? And I don't remember if it was in your communications chapter or your listening chapter, the story that you were telling about being in the car before that meeting. And I was just like, oh, that's such an amazing moment.
Yeah.
I would love for you to share that.
Yeah. Well, that was an interesting one. I was a third year person at BCG, and we were going to a rural Pennsylvania home center chain that had been purchased by our client. So the CEO of the acquirer was our main client. We're going to meet the CEO of the new firm. And I was, as I said, less senior guy. And we prepared the slides and kind of prepped back in the office. And if we pull into the parking lot, my boss, or we don't call him that at BCG, but my manager, the partner of the team, said, okay, Joe, so now let's think about this a little bit. And I said, well, we're prepared. But he said, okay, but where are they coming from? I said, well, you know, they're just, you know, I can't remember my answer at the time. He said, well, now think about it. So who are we to them? I said, well, you know, we're the consultants. I know, but who's consultants? Oh, I see. We're their boss's consultants. We might be the spies, you know, and what do you think they're going to want out of this meeting? Well, probably not to tell us much, just be safe. You know, so it's just, maybe just go through all these questions, which, well, there's only two of us. So it wasn't embarrassing, but it might've been embarrassing otherwise, you know, but it really helped me unpack, okay, what is in their mind as we walk in this room, not what is in our mind. Joaquin Duato, the CEO of J&J, Johnson & Johnson, when I spoke with him, he said, you know, Joe, really, it's best when people come in here and listen to me. And once you get what's on my mind, then talk to me. But don't just start talking at me, because if you don't know what's on my mind, you can guess I'm just going to shut down on you. So that's, you know, that. And I thought another story I thought was so powerful was the one of Scott Kirby, the CEO of United Airlines. This actually was impressive to me. So Scott meets everyone, I think it's vice president above. He interviewed in one day three heads. People that are going to be the head of the operations managers, which are in charge of the mechanics, which Scott said they call technicians. And I said the word mechanics twice, and he said, Joe, technicians. But yeah, and all he said, what do the technicians, you know, the folks at the airports want? And he said, sir, each one of them said, sir, they need more parts. He said, if you think about it, they want to get the plane up in the air. You know, they have to walk on there with those yellow things. And you and I look at them and say, why the hell isn't the plane flying? They don't feel good. And if their parts aren't in that airport, they're kind of stuck. And, you know, the finance people, of course, didn't want parts everywhere because that's just working capital and dollars tied up. But Scott walked away from all three of those and said, okay, we are going to put more parts, not in every airport, but more parts. It'll cover more of the things that might break in more of the airports. And that will inspire and motivate these technicians enough that they'll care more about, more about customer, United, et cetera. I mean, I'm thinking about this in this moment with how Boeing's airplanes are going right now, although I don't know if that's United's problem or Boeing's problem, you know, but it was just a powerful example. And of course, the finance people challenged him. The investors said, why are you putting all these parts out there? But he thought it was more important to get more benefits with his people feeling listened to and inspired to be able to deliver on their job versus the dollars, which, you know, you wouldn't think that's how a CEO is going to think. I mean, I was pretty impressed.
Yeah. I mean, it really speaks to the way that he asks questions, but then really listens and follows through on the answers. I think that it's so hard for us sometimes where we ask the questions and then we hear the answers, but don't necessarily like let them sink in, or we don't really do anything. We're like, okay, great. Check the box. I asked all the questions. We can move on.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you have any either favorite questions that really try to get to the underneath of what's going on, or just, recommendations for how we can kind of enter a conversation ready to really listen.
I mean, I'm a big believer, if you're trying to solve something, you know, but not many things you solve by yourself, but you know, with whatever team, that you actually go engage the skeptics and uncover the no's. And don't just think of, as someone said to me, the noologists as blockers, which you would assume, but no, they probably know something you don't know as to why the idea won't work. So actually one just question, you know, well, you don't feel this is a good idea. Why not? You know, you're saying no, what am I missing that you know that I don't know? As opposed to, well, what's wrong with you? Why are you in the way of this idea? I think it's very, it's kind of two pieces of that. Engage, find the skeptics, engage them, and just little, you know, ask, Why no? I mean, just why, you know, no is a little negative, but why no? Or what am I missing? That's if you're trying to solve a problem. I think if I'm having meetings, I'll even just find the most, this pulse of ties to inclusion, the less tenured person either on the screen or in the room, and just ask them something about themselves. I mean, it just, everyone looks, oh, wow, the senior guy's talking to the most junior guy. What does that mean? You know, it just opens up. Wow, and he's actually going to listen to them. That's not a business question, but it opens up the willingness to engage, you know, and actually say, okay, what does everybody have to say here?
Yeah. Well, and I think it gets to your point around being welcoming and building those relationships, that it cannot just be with the people who are your immediate team members, but really across the span of people that you work with. So if you have colleagues in other departments that you occasionally work with, or team members up and down a chain, that your job is not just to build the relationships and to talk to the people who are kind of in your immediate circle, but to really go out and ask questions and build relationships with folks much far reaching. Hey there, Mamie here. Just a quick and exciting update for all of you who are enjoying the Modern Manager podcast. The Modern Manager membership community is getting a minor makeover, and it is now called the Podcast Plus membership. And you can sign up for it and join a community of managers determined to do better every day. You'll get full access to our Slack channel, sketch notes with key takeaways from each episode, all types of guest bonuses, and the members-only podcast, which is ad-free and has extended interviews. So you get to hear the answers to my juiciest questions without interruptions like this one. Sign up today for $15 per month at themodernmanager.com/more. Can't wait to see you there.
Every CEO or lead senior leader I spoke with said that to me. You know, Joanne Creverseth, she's the CEO of Tapestry, Kate Spade and these other brands. And she said, I always try to look like four or five levels down and go ask them what they think of my idea. And she goes, people don't like me to do that, but they'll tell you the truth. I mean, if they're too scared, they might not. But if you give them a moment, because they're not gunning for the next promotion one below, you know?
Maybe you can talk a little bit more about this idea of being really welcoming and to create that environment where people do feel seen and do feel heard and do feel supported. Can you maybe just talk a little bit more about that?
You know, if you're having a meeting with people and you cancel the last minute or come in 10 minutes late, it kind of sends a funny signal that they're not very welcoming. And I get it, people are busy, but you can always be busy and cut off 5 minutes early and be on time. Now, that's not easy. And with Zoom, it's even harder. I said, I think it's easy. You just push the button and they're gone, you know, but it's easier to do that when you're the boss, I guess. So that's first off. And then I do think the other thing on this, you know, welcoming is just immediately asking questions. I think I already said, you know, oh, hey, Mamie, I don't know you. Tell me, you know, what did you do? Or you asked where I was, or what did you do this weekend? Or tell me just, you know, something about you. And it can be very simple. It doesn't matter. because it just frees the aperture for the conversation. Joaquin Duato told me a story, which I thought was pretty interesting. It's probably more about connecting and listening, but it's a welcoming tactic he uses. If he's going to talk to people and send some messages, he'll do two things, not every single time, but one thing he calls it friend testing. He'll find somebody three or four levels below him and say, hey, I gave this speech. I said this, what are people saying about me? And he said, when he first, 3 months in, he said, what are they saying? They said, oh yeah, you want to cut cost. So I never said those words. I said, I want to simplify so it can be more effective. He said, yeah, that's what you said, cut cost. So, simplify and effective, of course, to most people down below means, oh, we're going to fire some people and make it. He didn't mean that, and he does another very interesting thing, which is he gets a group of people together and he'll practice a speech or a talk, and he'll say words and they'll say, tell me back what I said. And he'll listen, he might've said cup and they said glass. So then he'll change the word to glass instead of cup because that's their word, and he always asks, okay, if I asked you to go home and tell your family at dinner what I said, what would you say? And he hears the whole story back, which may not be anywhere near the words he said, and rethink. So these are just examples, of welcoming others' views into your world, and actually enables you to connect a heck of a lot better, right? If you're connecting with where their brain's thinking, you're going to be so much more effective.
Yes. Oh my gosh. What a powerful strategy to ask someone to speak it back to you and then be able to use their language. And I feel like that gets to so many things that we do wrong as managers when we use business speak or jargon, right? Or we understand it, so we explain it the way we understand it, and then we never really check to see, did it make sense to the other person? Is my team getting this? Are we on board, right? And so we say one thing, other people hear something else, and we kind of are all just moving on without pausing. So I love that. It's such a simple strategy to say, like, so what did I just say? Tell me, repeat back to me. And then, oh, okay, I'm going to adjust accordingly.
Yeah, I was thinking, it's not quite welcoming, but as far as communicating message, my mentor many years always said, Joe, you have to say everything three times. I said, what do you mean three times? He said, well, the first time they hear your words, but they're not sure what you're on about. What do you want? What's the game here? The second time they're not listening because they're thinking about what happened with their child last night or the baby's cried out, whatever, their mom called and all this pressure. I don't know. Then the third time they actually, oh, I see what person's talking about. Oh, that's pretty interesting. And then engage. They may agree, they may disagree, but at least they engage. There's a funny story. A friend told me that she was watching the Olympics, and a Russian ballet team ice skating team did all their moves three times. And because the first time the judge said, well, what was that? And the second time they say, wow, that was pretty cool, but is it real? And the third time they'd say, oh, I see, they really did that. It was I thought it was interesting, the power of three in a different context than how I had been trained, but exactly the same thing. The listener, in that case, the watcher, doesn't really know what they saw or believe it or know what they heard until they've heard it a few times. Now, you don't want to repeat it for 6 minutes each three times. I'm not saying that. But
it's such a good lesson. I feel like I remember learning the concept of, like, when you're giving a presentation, tell people what you're going to tell them, then recap what you told them.
Well, yeah, it's the same, right? Same thing.
same idea. But I think it's, that makes so much sense when you're like, okay, I'm giving a presentation, and so therefore I need to, like, plan out what I'm going to say and make sure my points get across. But so much of what we do as managers is not necessarily that organized and planned. So it's like a good little mental model to stick in our head to be like, okay, anything I really want my team to remember out of this conversation, I need to tell them more than once. I can't just send one email. I can't just say it once in a meeting and hope it clicked and they got it and we're good, right? It does take multiple times to really make sure people remember it, have understood it, are ready to run with it.
Absolutely. You're using that example triggers a thought. I once was at a client meeting, and the client, the head of supply chain, was presenting to the CEO, and that person had their presentation that was going on this track, and the CEO asked a question like that, to the point of listening, and the person looked over, sort of, I would almost say half-assed answered, but didn't answer the question, and then went back to his presentation, and you could see the CEO's eyes glaze over. I mean, just stopped listening, to your point, a very earlier question about how you listen, and, slow down. Sorry, sir, or Steve, his name is Steve. What did you mean? Even if you say, I don't understand your question, can you explain it again? But otherwise, you're just going to be lost. And that this was a manager talking to his boss, but he was a very senior person.
Wow.
That'd be the same with your team. If your team's glazing over, good luck, as you just said, getting something done.
All right, I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about being a generous action ally. And I love the word action with ally. I mean, and generous with ally. So maybe you can explain what does it mean to be a generous action ally?
So, you know, you could be what I call a button wearer. So it's Pride Month, you put the Pride button on. I guess that's nice, but does that do anything for anybody? But, you know, you feel good about yourself. I've got the button. Or, and this, you know, these words are quite common in literature. You can be a performative ally, which is like, okay, there's metrics that I should have this many people of this diverse nature. You get it done, I'm done, you know, whatever. An action ally is actually someone who really is, well, back to the idea of the generous leader, giving of themselves to enable the other to really have a chance to thrive and grow. And it's quite important. I mean, I, you know, you can see me, I'm a white senior person, 60 plus years old. So like, what do I know about this? So I did interview and talk to a lot of my colleagues about what is it to them. And there's a couple of things they said. You know, they always said one thing is make sure you see me as the person. You know, one guy was Hispanic and gay. And he said, don't just see me as this Hispanic person. I mean, even there's Hispanic people from all over the world, a different back, or just as a gay person, you know, actually see me. And then what he said is open doors. And this is the important part. Create opportunities for me, but then don't do it. Let me go through and thrive on my own. And if, you know, if the person fails, well, you might help along the way, like you help anyway, you're coaching, but so be it. But you want to give them, open the door for them. And that, you know, that's really the key for, you know, an action ally. Someone else said to me, be a co-conspirator, you know, help me get opportunities and let me walk through on my own. And then if two other points, if the going gets tough, please don't run away. And that is, everyone had stories. I thought this person was my mentor until I started getting wobbly. Where were they? And someone else said, you got to give me your top 5%. Like, if you're going to help me develop, now that's true for any mentorship relationship, right? But if you're really going to help me thrive, give me the opportunity and then coach me along the way. Don't do it for me and don't run away if it gets tough. And I think that's the difference from just checking off numbers, which is, you know, more of a performative ally and probably, well, I won't comment. I don't know how many people or what kind of ally.
I'm wondering about how we can start to move into more action and how much do we really need to like learn first? And if we need to kind of start from a place of learning, what thoughts do you have on how we can start learning so that we're taking the right actions?
No, I think, well, what you said is very important because, you know, some people may not want you to be their ally. To achieve that, I would recommend instead of, hey, maybe I'm going to make sure you have a great career. You may think, well, I don't, you know, I have three other people. I don't need you to have my back, Joe, or whatever. So I think the first point is if you're actually thinking or if someone, you know, talking to people you may try to help make a difference with about do they, you know, want you to team with them and help, you know, provide support and open opportunities. And then to your point, really spend some time understanding you can never know their shoes and be in their shoes. And they all reminded me of this, but where, you know, understand their lived experience as best you can. And what are their goals and objectives? You know, what are you helping? If you don't do that, well, now you're, well, by definition, not being generous because you're assuming what's in your head. So kind of the point as opposed to where they need to get. So I think there is, you know, check whether a person's interested in you teaming with them and being supportive, speak with them, listen and learn. And then of course, you know, assess how it's going, which is, you know, in our day to day going so fast, it's not as easy as you think, you know, but you know, sitting down and saying, you know, am I helping the right way? Am I making a difference? I think it's another way to constantly check whether you're doing the right things instead of just jumping in.
Do you have any stories or examples of what that action or that door opening or clearing of the path looks like? So that once we know, we got a team member and we're going to partner with them to be an ally, to help, you know, move them forward, create opportunities for them to move forward. What does that part look like? What does the clearing of the path look like?
So I think a couple of things, you know, there was, I talked to one ACG woman who said that this other person, male, more senior guy, really went out of his way to help, you know, the women have equal, not equal opportunities, that's not a bad word, but, you know, really have a shot and be a player in the room and not be perceived like they often are. There's too many stories of, oh, hey, ma'am, would you take the notes? I mean, we've all been in the room, and yet that's the most senior person that would just have to take the notes. I mean, it's really embarrassing. But she tells a story once where the client said, okay, and turned over to, literally did that, turned over to this Marin and said, Marin, you know, go ahead and get started, and I assume you're taking the notes. And Marin said, no, she's the expert. I'm actually taking the notes. And she said it was interesting. She watched the room and like three people didn't even hear what happened, which was fine. Three people like, holy shit, what do you mean? She's the one? And then three thought, wow, very impressive. So, you know, just example, or there's another time, very, I don't know why I've got two female related stories, but someone in one of our meetings, a woman said something, you know, then conversation, and someone else said, and no one reacted. Someone else said the same exact thing, a guy, and everyone talked about it. And one of our colleagues said, hey, I mean, literally stopped the room, said, stop. Did you all see what just happened? And this person pretty clued in. And he actually said, she just said that. We ignored it. You said it. Now we're talking about it. You know, I think he kind of said shame on all of us. And let's just, so, you know, those are, you know, I think there's a little bit of when you see a situation that just, I'll just call it not right, you know, jump in and make a move then is important. I have another friend of mine that said, Joe, you know, he was a black leader at BCG, and he'd sit back like this, literally, can you see me? He'd sit way back and he'd move back. And I said to him, I said, Ian, you know, you're in this room because you belong in the room. We didn't invite you in the room just for the fun of it. And so I expect, you know, I don't care how you sit, but lean forward and engage and tell us what's on your mind and push. And he said, I said that pretty harshly. I don't know if it's that harsh. I can be blunt. But he said, but actually you cared enough to tell me and to bring me into the conversation. And it was very powerful, Joe. And I mean, I didn't like you saying that in front of others, but I realized, hey, I've got a seat here. Let me grab that seat. I think those, you know, actually a lot of what I'm saying there is, you know, in the moment when you see an opportunity to bring a person into the conversation who's either sitting back themselves or being, you know, whatever, inconsiderately ignored, you can take some action.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great way to think about it, is how can I make sure that people are in the rooms or in the conversations and having the opportunities to share their thoughts and their thinking when they may otherwise either not be invited or are being overlooked? What a simple thing that all of us as managers can do to support our team members and giving them more opportunities to show off what they got and to be part of the conversation. Sadly, we have to start to wrap up though.
Okay.
So can you tell us about a great manager that you worked for and what made this person such a fabulous boss?
Yes. So I had an exceptional mentor. Fabulous is a nice word. So I had a mentor for probably 20 years at BCG. He was, a lot of people didn't like him because he had this reputation of being tough guy or whatever. But actually, if you spend some time to understand, he was very success oriented and he was very much about developing you to be successful. And he cared. But you had to, you know, he would give you feedback, you have to work at it and all that. But he was incredible. And you know, what did he do? He was just, first off, I could tell he cared about me. It's also, he's one of these kind of people that if he didn't think you were going to really learn, he kind of turn off, you know, he just wouldn't talk to you as much. You can see that. But he did two things that are important. He'd often just lead by example. I mean, we would, you know, that story you raised with the Philadelphia in the parking lot in Pennsylvania, he stopped and he coached me through that entire thing. He didn't have to spend the time. He could have just managed that meeting himself. He also, it's given harsh feedback, but you know, one time he said to me, so Joe, if I put you and this guy, Philip, in a room with four white walls, no door out, and gave you a problem, and if you get out of the room, if you solve it, Philip would solve it and get out of the room every time. You may or may not solve it. I said, oh, well, that's tough. He said, however, if then I said, okay, here's the answer, now get it done. Philip would never get it done, and you would get it done 100% of the time. And partly because he's, you know what you don't know. So you ask, you surround yourself with teams. You invite the teams in. You're extremely inclusive. So, you know, you can say on the one hand, pretty tough feedback, although I remember it. But it wasn't that he was trying to tell me you're too dumb. He was trying to tell me you have these massive strengths. Use them to get results. So those were, you know, he just did things like that. And I just thought it was amazing. Now, I was mature enough to take the punches of the negative feedback. I mean, it wasn't negative, but, you know, but because it was all around wanting me really to learn.
Yeah, love that. What a sounds like a very interesting kind of person in the way that he managed. All right. And where can people learn more about you, Joe? And tell us what's the name of your book and where people can find it.
So the book is called The Generous Leader, 7 Ways to Give of Yourself for Everyone's Gain. You can go into any Amazon or any of the other companies. If you're not a, someone asked me, well, where can I buy it besides Amazon? You could just, you know, all the other sites have it. More about me there. I did joedavis.com, which has some background about me, and I'm putting more in there, you know, some of my thoughts. Or, you know, I hate to say it, but you can go on LinkedIn and look at the various posts. I'm trying to post some of my thinking. You can just scroll down pretty fast and just LinkedIn, Joe Davis. I think you have to say BCG or something because there's a lot of Joe Davises or the Generous Leader.
Fabulous. Well, thank you again so much. I know we only hit the surface of these.
I know.
But, but it was nice to at least just start to unpack some of these great ideas, and people should pick up your book and learn more.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks for the time.
Joe is giving away 5 copies of his book, The Generous Leader. It's an innovative and insightful 7-part guide to heartfelt and collaborative action that transform the reader into a generous leader. This book is for anyone seeking to elevate your heart, lead with humanity, and live a life of deep integrity. You must enter the drawing by Wednesday, May 8th. Plus, in the extended episode available to members of Podcast Plus, Joe and I talk about how small acts have big impact and how you can incorporate more small but powerful acts into your day and week. In order to enter the drawing, become a member of Podcast Plus. And when you do, you get dozens of other guest bonuses, extended episodes, and more. Join us at themodernmanager.com/more. All the links are in the show notes, and they can be delivered to your inbox when you subscribe to my newsletter. Find that at themodernmanager.com. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.